Blog Talk Radio.
What happens when the thinking changes? When conventional wisdom is simply blown up? Could we start over, where no idea was a bad idea? What if we sought out the truth, however inconvenient the truth might be? What if we found new ways, applying logic with consistent, measured progress, with voices of reason asking why not? What if we use data tracking and predictive modeling? What if we researched the science behind the science, asking new questions? What if? What if it wasn't about a show, but a movement? What if we did this together? Welcome to the future. Welcome to Bigfoot. Ground Zero.
Search crews suspended the search for a missing two-year-old who was last seen on Friday afternoon in Lemhi County. His family was camping at the Timber Creek Campground in the Salmon Chalice National Forest. The family reported him missing around 2 o'clock this afternoon, and crews immediately searched surrounding areas. An Amber Alert was not issued because of the time frame. Search and rescue crews have conducted searches on the ground and from the air. Divers, horses, and dogs are all helping in the search. The Lemhi County Sheriff's Office says even though it's not an Amber Alert, it's being taken very seriously.
Dave, you're listening to Bigfoot Ground Zero. Thanks for tuning in. I know you could be doing a lot of other things tonight, and I definitely appreciate the time that you do spend with me. Now, before we get started, I want to address a couple of things. We are going to actually have Carl on again tonight. And as you've noticed, he's becoming more and more a part of the program. A couple of reasons. He and I have known each other for about 20 years. And our dialogue goes well together because of that. We can almost finish each other's sentences sometimes, which can be a bad thing. But for the most part, it's good, and I hope you find it entertaining. I think Carl is going to become more a part of the program and eventually co-host with me as we kind of ease into this. I look forward to doing that. And we will have Carl on. He and I are going to talk about this whole cloaking thing and the ability for animals to camouflage. Now, as you know, I don't subscribe to the theory that an animal can just disappear, but I do know, based on certain things in nature and what these animals do kind of appear to be able to do, is disappear into an environment based on their physical makeup. And we'll get into a couple of examples of those, and even for this supposed hairy creature, how this could happen, a lot of it might be based on light, time of day, you know, a couple of things. And I don't want to kind of let the cat out of the bag. But before we do that, I'm going to piss a lot of people off right now because, and I'm rarely going to do this, but this is one of those times where I just feel compelled to call the Bigfoot community out. And I'm a little frustrated because I hear a lot of people in this community, so-called, talk about how they're an expert, how they know what a Sasquatch does, what a clan might do, that they do live in clans, how they reproduce, what kind of structures they build, what they eat, what they drink, how they migrate, yada, yada, yada. Now, let me ask you this question. Now, this is even for people who have seen a Sasquatch. Now, I look up in the sky and I see an airplane. Does that make me a pilot? Does that make me an aviator, an aeronautics expert? Hell no. I'm a guy who saw an airplane. But I feel like we have a group of people out there that have a desire, more or less, to be on television, to be on radio. And I think it started with History Channel, Discovery Channel, Animal Planet, people who are giving credence to these folks who, for the most part, are better suited to be the introverts that they probably were before they found themselves in the Bigfoot world. They have the YouTube channels, they have the podcasts, and you know what? Here's the thing that really irritates me. And again, I apologize. I got to get this off my chest. Some of you just let this go. If this resonates with you, great. But the thing that irritates me with this, again, Bigfoot community, is that I don't know if anybody who's listening, some of you might know what a sea anemone is. They're the little plants that catch the fish, and they kind of wave back and forth with the current. And there's a bunch of them together, and they wave back and forth. It almost looks like the wave in the stadium, the baseball or football game that goes around. This is what happens in the Bigfoot community. We can't find evidence other than footprints, and there's some sightings, and we have a film that's years and years and years old. So in order for these people to stay relevant, in order for them to, in some cases, make money from you or from me, they have to change the goalposts. See, you can't explain why you can't find Bigfoot, even if you're an expert. So what you do is you change the topic. Well, they shapeshift, clearly. Well, they disappear into another dimension. Well, I think what they might be doing is being transported down by UFOs to conduct whatever they're doing and then transport it up by UFOs. Bullshit. We have a flesh and blood animal out there that is waiting to be discovered, and it's frustrating. And we talk about in this camouflage, cloaking episode, we kick around the idea that, well, you know, there's possibilities out there. We don't know. But that's the thing. We don't know. We don't make definitive statements. And you'll never hear that on this show. Look, I'm a simple guy. I record this program from my kitchen table. I try to put a cool intro together. I try to have good content. Excuse me, I can't talk. Good content. I try to have good content. And sometimes you can't find it, and sometimes you can. And so that's why we don't air every week. Fortunately, we could do back-to-back this week. And this whole Bigfoot community is insane. You know, and here's how it goes. Here's the cycle of it, right? So you are sitting there watching television, usually January, February, not a lot to do. You start watching these Bigfoot shows, because that's when they start coming on, reruns of Monster Quest and all these things. And if you've not really been into the topic, you look at it and you say, huh, there might be something there. So what do? You go online. You Google Bigfoot. Not only do you find the products that people are trying to sell, I swear if you put Bigfoot on sunglasses or a teapot or anything, you're going to sell it. But you go on Google and you look around and you think, wow, there is something to this. And you go on a website after website and you probably find the BFRO and you've got all these sightings and, man, it's right in front of your face. It's very convincing. You see the Patterson-Gimlin film. It might be your first time. Maybe it's not your first time. And then you decide to go to YouTube. And oh my God, suddenly you're inundated with all of these videos that are basically designed to get a lot of click-throughs. And there's a lady in Canada that does this. I'll leave the website out and the YouTube channel out. But inevitably, you find yourself on Facebook. And it's almost like a revelation, like, oh my God, I need to find these groups on Facebook because there are other like-minded people like myself who want honest discourse about the possibility of Sasquatch being real. So what do? You go on Facebook, and literally there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of websites dedicated to Bigfoot. See, now at this point, you're a Squatchaholic, and there's no doubt you've been bitten by the bug. You have the disease. So you go onto the websites, you join these groups, and you say, I've joined this group in an honest effort to have a discussion about the possibility of these things being real. And everyone in the room, you know, digitally, of course, looks at you like, yeah, that's what we're all here for. But then you find that these groups that you thought were going to be sympathetic to you, that we're going to be kind of an area where you can express your thoughts. They're not. Every time you put an opinion up, you get stabbed with knives. And then you end up doing what I call the Sasquatch or Facebook suicide. It goes something like this. I tried to join this group to find the truth about these things, but it's clear to me that nobody wants to find the truth. You can inbox me if you'd like, but I'm off this group. And you make this big display about how you quit, and 2 weeks later, you're back. The point is, this Bigfoot community has fostered more people who are natural sociopaths or were once introverts who have found themselves to be extroverts because they're either behind the computer, you know, this is the first time they've ever got an audience of maybe even more than five people. And the whole topic's becoming a joke. And we support these people. And they go on to do other things. They go on to do supernatural things, you know, whatever the case is. Because Bigfoot's no longer cool. And let me tell you, that cool window, which has been around for, you know, 5 or 6 years, 7 years, whatever the case is, when things started really ramping up, is starting to close. And people will find a new venue. And that's what they're starting to do. And Sasquatch shows, some of the most popular ones out there, are now have gone down the rabbit hole of government conspiracies and all these things. And we're paying for these. We're paying for membership to certain things. They're fleecing you. People are fleecing you. So here's what I want to do. I needed to get this out, and I've been saying it for a long time. Yeah, I do have a Facebook page. I rarely post there. I put the shows on there. It's, you know, whatever. Here's the shows, and they update for people, you know, who want to know when the show is airing. But I really want us to get away from all of this. I want to get away from YouTube channels. I want to get away from these television shows. I want these whack jobs, these crazy people who, if they didn't have this Bigfoot thing, would probably be playing, you know, Minecraft or something in the basement of their mother's house. I don't even know what Minecraft is. I don't know, some game or something just came to mind. But it's frustrating. And I want the conversation to be wrapped around, if not science, then healthy skepticism. And you can talk about the what ifs all day long as you don't go down the road of cementing that belief to be a fact when you don't know it to be so. And every time somebody comes out to be a Bigfoot expert, ask them, why are you a Bigfoot expert? Well, I saw one. Okay, great, you saw one. Or if somebody tells you they're a Bigfoot expert because they're getting, you know, recordings or they're doing XYZ, well, give me the proof. Footprints, that's provable. I think Jeff Meldrum he started to get a little wacky there, you know, associating with certain people he shouldn't have. But he knows about dermal ridging. He knows about those mid-tarsal breaks. He knows how these things work. And he's found some of these prints that people have brought him that are just, they're way out there. Look, I get it. There is some evidence. But let me clue you in, everyone. No one is a Bigfoot expert. Until we have a Jane Goodall, until we have somebody that sits there with these things, follows them, gets photographs, gets stool samples, finds a body, gets hair samples, figures out some form of communication, can actually interact with these things in some way, nobody is an expert. And that's the truth. Including myself. I'm just a guy in his kitchen doing this podcast, trying to learn about these things. And that's why I started this podcast. And I know that's why you listen. And I've gone on now. It's, good Lord, it's 12 minutes and 22 seconds. It's been a long time. All of that said, I do want to thank you for listening to the show. I had to get that out there. I've said it a lot on Facebook, and you know, people agree with me, and we go back and forth. I do appreciate you listening, and as always, please, BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com. Feel free to email me. Feel free to disagree with me. Feel free to blast me or agree with me or suggest topics. But I'm not an expert. I'm just a guy trying to find out about Bigfoot. All right, so without further ado, let's talk to Carl. We'll go over the whole cloaking thing, camouflage thing. We'll throw some ideas around. And as always, you can hear from me on the back end with my commentary and maybe some questions for you guys. And we'll talk about the topic for the next program. All right, thanks so much, and let's go with Carl.
All right, here we are with Carl. Carl, can you hear me?
Yep.
All right. So what I wanted to talk about tonight, and I know I kind of teased this in the monologue a little bit. Actually, I talked about it quite a bit, so the listeners are queued up here. I want to talk about this whole camouflaging or cloaking thing in the Bigfoot community. And there's frustrating sides to it in the sense that nobody knows for sure that this can happen. It doesn't physically happen that something can cloak. This is not a Star Trek episode. You know, these spaceships aren't cloaking themselves and all of a sudden disappearing. We're talking about a flesh and blood creature that people say just walks in and out of thin air, or they will see it disappear. And whether or not you believe that, what I wanted to talk about was, okay, and I think you and I had spoken about this offline, it was like a month or two ago, whatever the case was, we were kicking ideas around, and there's something to be said for the whole camouflage thing, right? Because something could camouflage itself well enough that it could appear to disappear in certain lights, so, you know, sunset, sunrise, certain background settings, which I'm sure animals are familiar with. I wanted to kick those ideas around, and I know for those of you who are listening right now, some of those ideas may go out in the left field for a minute or two, but I promise we'll come back. But I wanted to just, again, explore how the whole camouflage thing can work and how this might be attributed to Bigfoot based on what we know about other animals in the animal kingdom. So I'm sorry to kind of hit you with all that, Carl, but do you want to just, let's take a step back, and do you want to talk about some of the animals that we know of that kind of have some of these characteristics, and then we can kind of use that as a springboard to go from there.
Yeah, one of the things that I do when I'm wondering, you know, how apparently Sasquatch is the master of camouflage, all the stories we hear, et cetera, whether or not they can see in the infrared, et cetera, I go back another step and look at, okay, is there a precedent for this in the animal kingdom? Is it already done somewhere else? Last week we talked about whether or not these creatures can see at least part of the infrared or ultraviolet spectrums. And although seeing infrared is kind of rare in the primates, certain species of snakes, certain species of bats and insects can see or sense infrared, and lots of animals can sense ultraviolet. So it's not completely out to lunch to say that Bigfoot cannot, no way, no how, sense ultraviolet or infrared. I ran across an article, actually, weirdly enough, a week or two ago about some scientists that were playing around in the lab with what were supposedly invisible infrared lasers, and they kept seeing these weird green flashes of light when the lasers were on. So they were experimenting with them, and they came to this theory that under certain conditions, even the human eye that is supposedly not physically able to see infrared light, under certain conditions, the human eye can see brief flashes of infrared light as this greenish sort of a tint in the background. So given that, who's to say that it's completely out to lunch to say that Sasquatch has no way, no how to see infrared light from trail cams? In my world of work, I've learned that using the words never or always is not a good thing to do. You need to investigate and look into it before you can say, yeah, that cannot happen, or yeah, that always happens. You really need to be careful about that. And I was thinking about a similar approach when you hear all these stories about how a Sasquatch would literally just appear from nowhere out of the woodline, scare the crap out of somebody, and then walk back in the woodline and just disappear. Like, you know, you've heard the stories, the portal opened, then he stepped in and he was gone.
Right.
I didn't think that was the case. I did some looking around and I came up with two pretty interesting examples of animals that are already in nature that have been studied extensively that have something about the way that their either the feathers or the hair on their body is built that would allow them to either stand out greatly from the background, in this case the peacocks, and in another case, the way that their hair is built, it allows them to almost completely blend in with the background, and that would be the polar bear. And there's, in most animals, as we, even in people, there are two kinds of, with people, it's mostly pigmentation that gives us our color of our hair, our eyes, our skin. It's these special cells inside of us that make colors around the iris of our eyes, the color in our hair, the color in our skin. Pretty familiar with that. That's biological pigmentation, it's called.
Right.
There's another type of coloration that humans may not have, but it's, we see it in other animals, the two I just mentioned. It's called structural coloration. And this, the structural coloration comes about by specific, very microscopic structural surfaces inside of usually the hair or the feathers that have some sort of a lattice, like a ladder structure, that in between the rungs of the ladder will have small crystalline structures that will either absorb or reflect certain colors of light. Now, if we start off with the peacock feathers, looking at peacock feathers, if you look at the coloration that they naturally have through the pigments, the colors are brown. But everyone has seen these peacock feathers that have these crazy iridescent shiny greens and blues. Those are not pigments. Those are structural colorations where there are these crystalline lattice structures inside of the feather that will reflect certain colors of light, which allow it to stand out from the background and attract a mate. Something very similar is going on if you look at polar bears. It's very similar, but it's kind of the opposite. Polar bear hairs, if you look at them, are actually transparent. But inside of the hairs are similar lattice structures with these crystalline structures in the lattices that will reflect all of the colors of the visible light that we know it, so they sort of refract this white light. So they can sit on the edges of the ice holes up in the Arctic, and when the seals pop their head out to breathe for that second and a half, the polar bear has dinner. They only have to be invisible for a second.
Okay, so then I have a question now. I'm going to immediately throw you a curveball. All right, here
okay.
we go. And I'm letting you know it's coming. The question then with Sasquatch becomes, now if you look at all these animals, they know their backdrop. They know how to camouflage. They know typically what their fur does or whatever the case is, right? Sasquatch seems to disappear in different backgrounds and different environments in some of these stories. What do you make of that?
I think that their hair and... it's a combination of their hair and probably their behavior. Their hair allows them to reflect, unless it's pretty, I've heard of a couple of up-close encounters in fairly bright, direct light where the witnesses have said that their hair is glisteny, like it shines on the ends.
So it kind of softens the edges, or?
Yeah, like it's softening the edges and reflecting some of the light away. That away, make it late in the afternoon, put them against a tree line, and then have them stand perfectly still as they back into the wood line. What happens? They become a whole. They're gone.
You know, and it's funny, too, that you say that, because I've seen situations, and we all have, where an animal disappears into a bush, and a lot of times it'll be a small animal, rabbit, squirrel, cat, whatever, who knows. And as they do it, they disappear. Well, these things are bigger, but they're still melting into this same environment, and they're bigger, and they're just going away. And have you noticed, now I go through a lot of sightings, I know we do when we kick some of these things around, but I seem to have noticed that there are a lot of these disappearances or Sasquatches walking in and out of nowhere early morning or really late evening. Am I wrong about that, or it just seems to be kind of the theme?
I think they know they've got a pretty good idea early in the day or late in the day when the light levels are low. They probably know that if they stick pretty close to a tree line, it's just a matter of stepping back into the tree line, and they know that if they drop down on all fours, step back in the tree line, and while the person is still processing the WTF moment, these guys are gone.
I wonder, and I'm just thinking about this because I'm looking on WebMD and just doing a little research here as we talk. Something came up in my mind. Now, the iris is the pigment portion of the eye, right?
Yep.
And the cornea is a clear dome over it. So through these two, I'll say devices, God's devices, nature's devices, or whatever, there's a way that light is picked up, vision is put together. I know it comes in upside down and your brain writes it up. What would there be characteristically within a Sasquatch that, based on what the human eye, how it's built, we might not be able to see? And
well,
I know that's out of left field, dude. I'm sorry, but I just thought of that.
No, actually, I was looking at this in my Bio 101 book, Inside the Brain, about midway back. There's an area called the lateral geniculate nucleus, which does a lot of association before it gets back to the back of the brain where the visual cortex is. This lateral geniculate nucleus will take things like questions like, okay, what does it look like? Does it look like a dog? Does it look like a tree? Does it look like a cat? Does it look like a, from the edges that it sees, the colors that it sees? And there's a lot of association going on in that first couple of milliseconds where your brain is trying to figure out what it's seeing. And then it goes back to the visual cortex, and then the reasoning centers of the brain where it says, oh, or that's a tree, that's a cat, that's a squirrel.
Even based on the outline. You wouldn't
by the outline, the shadows, how big it is, its relationship to the background. There's a lot of associating that the brain has to do before you actually see a dog or see a tree or see a fish. Your brain has to put it together with what it knows and goes, oh, that's a dog.
Okay, now I'm going to get really wacky. And we may just have to stop the show here because you may laugh me out of the place. But I have a question for you. So based on what you said and the ambient light around you, whatever time of day it is, you know, based on the light within the environment that you're in, is it possible to wear something, some kind of eyewear that could filter light differently? And I know the answer is yes to this based on what you could design, but here's what I'm saying, right? These things aren't necessarily invisible, but they're really hard to see because of the way the structure of the hair is, the way where they sit or stand or whatever. Would it be possible to do something like this? Now, I don't know if you ever fly fish, but you go to a stream and you have the light glaring off the water, right? You can't see that trout that's 4 feet out and 2 feet down from the water from you, where you can easily drop a bug and nab him because of the glare. But if you put on the polarized sunglasses, you don't even see a glare, and then you can pick up the fish movement and you can see it right there.
Yes.
Do you see what I'm getting at?
I was looking at something similar a couple of weeks ago, but on the other end of the light spectrum. I was looking at And it's probably easier to do today with the profusion of technology, but I was looking at how is there a way to use light that's in the far ultraviolet spectrum. And if you look at pictures, there are photographers out there that tinker around that use a lot of ultraviolet flash in their pictures. They're usually portraits, fairly up close, that sort of thing.
Sure.
And what I've noticed is that they're really, really contrasty. The darks are really dark. The lights are really light. And if it's a picture of a person or up close landscape, everything has a very specific, definitive outline. Very, very, very contrasty. And I was trying to figure out how hard would that be to make sort of like a game cam, only instead of using infrared, using ultraviolet light, but you'd need a lot more equipment. The ultraviolet lamps are pretty big. They need a lot of energy. But if you're going to make something stand out against its background, it has to be really contrasty. And either the way far end of the ultraviolet or the way far end of the infrared, to me, from what I've read, is about the only thing that will do that. You have to have some sort of a spotlight or a flash that will actively illuminate the entire area with that frequency range to make whatever it is very definitive and very edgy and very standout-ish.
Now, as you're talking about this, I just thought of something brilliant. We can manufacture sunglasses that say Bigfoot finders on the side and sell those things. And, you know, it'd be like the little Annie decoder rings and just send people out into the woods. Now, I think we'd sell a million of those things. But
put them in the back of comic books, you'd make $1 million.
That's right. What's that movie where they said that? You want to sell stuff? Camouflage it. Same things. Put Bigfoot on it. We're all set. So let me ask you this then. So I'm thinking of the human eye and how we perceive things. And I don't know, when I'm looking at data of these sightings, one of the things that I like to go back and do is take a look age of some of these folks when they see these disappearances and appearances, because I got to wonder, as the eye ages and you have things like macular degeneration and all these little things that happen as you get older,
mm-hmm.
things you can see when you're younger, is it possible that some of these appearances and disappearances in low light, early morning or evening, have to do with the way the eye is developing or degenerating at whatever point of life that is? Or again, am I just like way out?
No, I was running that against all the just detritus that I have in my mind that I remember. A number of years ago, there was a company or two that was making these devices that they would put outside of certain areas that operated in the high frequency acoustic range that only younger people would hear, and it kept them from loitering in certain areas. But once you got over like 25 years or 30 years old, you couldn't hear these things, so you didn't notice them. But when, you know, those pesky 18-year-olds were hanging around on my damn lawn, It would bother them. They wouldn't hang around there because it would annoy them. They'd get headaches. Their ears would hurt, and they'd go somewhere else and loiter. So once again, there is precedent for this in biology and science. So maybe that's something I could go look back through databases and see certain times of the day, what age group is there a predominant? You know, are they under 25? Are they, you know?
Yeah,
there is a legitimate scientific question there, yes.
I just want the ladies and gentlemen in the audience to note that I just basically asked Carl to do research, and he said he would do it without me even really asking. So kudos to me. Thank you, Carl.
No, I'm curious now. I'm curious. I'm interested to see if there is something, you know, are these people that tend to see these things in the evenings or early mornings, are they under a certain age? Is there a way to find out if they're under 30 years old, under 25 years old? Because, you know, I'm 51 here, and I know my vision and my hearing is nowhere what it used to be even 10 years ago. So
no, I know. I get it. I get it. Totally.
That is scientifically provable right there. So maybe you're onto something.
Well, who knows? I mean, there's a first for everything. But so the other question is, I'm going through this, and I'm thinking about these things. The thing that's frustrating to me, let's just take a step back and talk about the community. Right, so if you go into Facebook, you go into all these websites, wherever you go, I don't see anybody, and forgive me, there might be somebody out there, and please correct me, but I don't see anybody asking these kind of questions. And you are, you know, you study human behavior kind of for what you do for a living and have done. You know, why don't people do this? Is it the path of least resistance to say, wow, they just cloak? Or is it people are too lazy? Because in 25 minutes we've been talking here, or 20 minutes, we've covered off on about four things just kind of riffing off each other of things that, you know, how it could be. I just don't get this, because I feel like if we just ask these questions, and I know I'm going off on a tangent here, if we just ask these questions collectively, we might get a lot further. I mean, what is your take on all of that? Because I get frustrated.
Part of the answer to me, and I thought the same thing, part of the answer, and I think we're all to a certain extent guilty of this, otherwise we wouldn't be at least nominally involved in the topic. Part of it is we enjoy a good story. Part of it is, not quite sure how to say this without offending too many people.
Just do it.
Is too many people don't have an understanding of basic science to go, how's that work? Why is it that X only is heard in this and Y is only seen in that? And this is in my job. This is what I grew up the last 30 years. You know, I was asked those questions, so I had to find that stuff out. But it's, I really don't want to say something like those darn kids today, but it's not as important, as stressed, as prominent?
Well, it's an attention,
it used to be.
It's an attention span thing, too. I'm sure it's an attention
part
span.
Of it, part of it is definitely short attention span theater, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, look, I totally got us off topic. My apologies.
No.
That was just a little question.
It's actually something that is worth asking, because if we're going to get more people involved in the science behind the sighting, they have to be interested in the science.
True. That's true. So speaking of science, it leads into my next question. And, you know, it's kind of funny as we're going through this, I can see some topics, I'm pulling some things up.
Also, for those of you that just listened to that, send all your hate mail to Carl at BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com. Dave did not goad me into this. I said that. Send your hate mail to me.
Listen, I have thick skin. I don't care. You should see some of the hate mail I get. I don't care anymore. It's just whatever. It is what it is. But what about, okay, so what about condition? And here's another thing that I'd like to know. Some of these people that are seeing these things, now light changes its characteristic as the sun goes down and it comes up, bouncing off everything, whatever. Now, if somebody's colorblind and they have trouble seeing like reds and blues, like blue light, green, whatever it is, right? Could that affect, in a positive way, some of these? I'd love to know, I am colorblind, and
ooh,
I did success watch this time. Maybe something popped out, and then they focused on it because then the vision became clear because they saw that outline that somebody might not have done.
Right.
I'm just throwing things against the wall, but I feel like there's so much.
No, it's interesting because the most common colorblindness is red-green. It's usually in the male. More males tend to be out there doing things like hunting, et cetera, et cetera. Let's see, red, orange, yellow, green. Green's in the middle of the spectrum. That's interesting. That's something else I want to look at.
I am stumping Carl. I like it. No, this is good. This will be for another. This will be for another show down the road. Because, you know, again, you put all these things. It's almost like this matrix, right? This XY graph that you put. And if you could find out, okay, if this person had this, and you could plot this graph and you could find out, you know, the zone in which all of these conditions might come together, and the Holy Grail would be the person that had all five or whatever.
Right. And said, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, exactly. And then we'll just send them out and we'll we'll get this thing done once and for all, you know. So what else have, and I know you've been doing a lot of research on this, you know, touch on some of the other, if there's animals or some of the sightings that have taken place. What are some of the characteristics that people say, you know, this happened and that's how I know it disappears or it appears?
I can't even count how many times in various podcasts or reading books where the person who has seen the creature has said literally out of the woodline, and there it was. Or when the sighting was done, it stepped back into the woodline and it was swallowed up and it was gone. And that's the thing that makes me wonder with the camouflage ability in this creature's hair, postulated, my theory, of course, where the hair is able to scatter and reflect the visible spectrum of light to basically, and I hate to use this word, but to literally turn this creature into a blob squatch. Once it steps into the wood line, the low level of light that is absorbed or refracted by the hair, this thing just disappears. And that combined with that, you know, 2 or 3 seconds of your mind going, WTF, what did I just see? And this thing is gone. I think there's a combination of a couple of things going on there.
Okay, so I want to finish that thought if you want to, because I have a question for you that I think is going to be really interesting, and I think it's something we're going to have to go with further maybe on another show. But do you have a...
No, go ahead. What's the question?
Well, do you remember, I know it was a few years ago, I believe, and I don't know if it was your dog, I don't know if it was a dog by a previous owner, whatever the case was, you mentioned one time that every now and then in your home, you would get out of the corner of your eye or you would see a puppy, a small dog.
Oh, yeah, yeah, my little brown dog.
Your little brown dog. Is he still there? Is he still there? Or?
No, I haven't seen him in about 4 years.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Does he leave little brown droppings for you? Or? But they're just make-believe, so you don't have to worry about it.
But I would, every once in a while, in my house, see, at the time I had two dogs, and every once in a while, I was absolutely positive, out of the corner of my eye, I would see this little brown dog going into the dog crate or into the kitchen, or and I would do a dog census, and my two dogs in the physical world were nowhere near where I saw this third little brown dog. It was very weird. I had a little brown dog in my house that was a third dog. I was positive.
I'm going to give you one guess as to where I'm going.
Okay.
Okay. But you don't even have to guess. Here it is. And I want you to reach through the phone and choke me for even going here, but I have to go here because I know there's going to be email, and we're just going to address this.
No, that's fine.
I know psychic vision, right? A lot of people who are listening to this show will say Bigfoot is flesh and blood, but I believe in ghosts. Okay, well, great. And then the question becomes, could the two kind of bleed over or whatever? So we have to look at the psychology behind that and who believes that. But if you think about psychic vision, and I don't mean somebody who can see the dead. I mean, they can see the dead and they see these things, right? What's to say, just as somebody is seeing a manifestation of energy as a ghost, either just a loop that this thing is playing in every night it does the same thing, or something intelligent, to say, even though they're in the woods, they're not seeing some kind of energy that's manifest from millions of years ago, and then, oh yeah, some of these things will interact with you just like some of these evil spirits will.
Two things. I'm pretty sure that I actually had a third little brown dog in the house, because at the time, my niece, this was 4 or 5 years ago, last time I saw the dog, my niece was sleeping in the bedroom downstairs, and she always kept the door closed. And one day she asked me if I let, I've got another little brown dog who's actually in this part of the world, who's alive. She asked me that why the other little brown dog was in her room last night, and I said, no, he was up here with me all night. There's no way. She saw this little brown dog trying to get up in bed with her. So this is some And I didn't tell her about the little brown dog I kept seeing. She
right.
didn't know about it. She saw it independently. Also, there's two, we're going to go woo here, so
that's
everybody
right. go
just
ahead.
Grab on, we're going to go woo. There's the aspect of residual hauntings.
Yes.
Where energies may have attached themselves to an area God knows how long ago, and they just keep replaying themselves over and over like a VCR stuck on repeat. Or there's another theory, and it's interesting. I've been reading up on this. It's called a tulpa. It's a Tibetan term, and there's like four or five different meanings for the word tulpa, depending on the context of it. But if you're talking about Tibetan monks, and you mention the word tulpa, you're talking about a thought form. You're talking about something that you think about so much that it sort of starts to exist in this world. And there have been a number of examples of where people have run into what they think might have been a tulpa. It was a very interesting conversation I heard not long ago on a podcast where a writer, an author, was talking about this. He was working on this series of books, and he spent this huge amount of time thinking and writing about this main protagonist character of his book series that he was working on. And a couple of years later, he bumps into the guy in a bar. He was the same height, the same hair, the same clothes, the same mannerism, drank the same drink. Just so the idea that human consciousness cannot will something into existence, to me anyway, is, considering all the other stuff that's gone on out there through history, is not beyond the pale of like, oh, no, that's, you know, like I said, words like always and never, you really shouldn't use those.
So could there be, so it's almost like when you're driving and they say, don't look directly at an object because you'll drive into it. You'll stare, it's almost like you are so focused on the event or whatever it is that it happens for you because you're so focused, or is it, that's what I'm hearing. Is that right? Or
No. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There are those that say that in certain circumstances, you can make that happen. Now, this is way out there in, you know, the world that we haven't even defined what consciousness is yet, but we can come of consciousness, which is a whole other set of talks out there.
So I'm going to start opening my wallet and just staring into it. And I think
and thinking stacks of $100 bills.
Stacks of hundreds. Bucks everywhere. No, I'm kidding. That commercial was crazy. But it's okay. It's a question that has to be asked because, well, for one reason, I mean, you go to places like Gettysburg. 60,000 people died, in one or two days of battle, you know, that lasted maybe, I don't know, 12, 16 hours total battle combined. There's
yes.
a lot of energy there, and there are people that see things. They see, you know, cavalry units riding. They hear gunfire. They hear all these things. And then you just got to wonder, man, are we just seeing like this Neanderthal thing that just pops in and out based on, and I know it sounds crazy, and here goes the hate mail. I thought you guys were scientists, blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, that question has to be asked. And I just don't know if there's a definitive way to ever answer it.
No, the Civil War battlefield point is a really good place to start because I don't know how many times I have heard people that are on paranormal shows that talk about when they saw something that they thought was a Civil War reenactor going over part of the battle at this part of the battlefield, that part of the battlefield, et cetera. And then they ask the docent about it, and the docent says, we didn't have anyone over there today. And then there's this awkward silence of, oh, then what did I see?
And no one wants to address
that. That has happened over and over and over again, where these residual hauntings keep playing out at Civil War battlefields because of the gigantic amount of energy and blood went into these things. It's no wonder that there's still something playing out there.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you got to wonder with some of these small, you know, these short or brief sightings, you know, what the characteristics are around the history of those sites. You know, what kind of sorrow or good energy or whatever happened to all these. And that's another thing. You say, okay, if it's energy related, and you know, some of these ghosts, you know, appear around water or areas where there's water for some reason. That seems to generate a lot of paranormal activity. There's paranormal activity when things are messed up in a house, or when things are starting to be rearranged. You know, and you got to wonder with these sightings, what's happening at these sightings. Now, if you're listening out there, I know you're saying, okay, oh my God, now they've gone so far off the deep end. They're talking about if this happens and the probability of this, and then they're taking it as a baseline. We're not doing that. What we're saying is, if you're going to look at some of the aspects of some of these sightings, there's certain things you have to take into consideration. And I think some of the greatest minds in the world, I think you would agree, Carl, have said that, like you said, you have to look at every possibility in order to dismiss possibilities.
Right. Words like always and never are not a good starting point.
Now, let me say this about that. I personally don't believe, and you know what? I'd love to be wrong. I would love for somebody to take a flute and put it where the sun don't shine on me if these things turn out to be, you know, fourth dimension flute playing fruit basket things. I'll be the first to get in line and say, hey, I was wrong, you know. But I just don't think that's the case. What is your inclination? I don't want to pin you to something, but what is your inclination on
I was thinking about that today, and I was thinking of Native American tribes a long time ago, even up through the 1800s, versus what we have today for society. And this is going to sound like an old man saying, you damn kids, get off my lawn. But Native peoples, whether they were in Indochina, whether they were the Mayans, whether they were the Hopis and Zunis, or the Inuits, 1,000 years ago or 200 years ago, were very, very much in touch with a very spiritual side of existence where everything had a spiritual meaning and a lesson. And then you fast forward to today, where we have the Kardashians and everything else, and, you know, CERN, and everything is this materialist, reductionist, very much non-spiritual existence, and there's a disconnect. We're missing the point on something to an extent. I'm not saying that Sasquatch is this spiritual, completely, you know, spiritual creature, but if you listen to the stories from Native peoples all over the world, everything had a physical and everything had a spiritual meaning, and that was part of their lessons in their growing up, was the coyote, for example. The spiritual side, he was the trickster spirit.
Right.
He was the one who would play tricks on people. He was the one who was there to lead you astray if you were able to be led astray. The coyote, in the physical sense, was also there to help you find food, depending on what part of the world you were in. Everything had a spiritual and a physical story. We don't have that today. So I wondered, for all the Sasquatch sightings out there, for today's materialist, reductionalist, secular, what are we missing? There's something there we're missing.
Well, I'll tell you, it, from what you said, I mean, everything, they had a relationship with everything, hence the stories behind everything. There was a meaning spiritually, everything, like you just said. But we're not in the woods as much. I mean, we're not
no.
in the woods 1/10,000th of a percent of what Native Americans were.
No.
You know? And when you're out there.
And that's
there,
another part of the problem, is we have the woods and put parking lots on it and moved ourselves as far as our as we could away from it. So now getting in touch with that side, we literally have to go to South America and take a ayahuasca trip.
You know, and that bothers me because we're encroaching. I mean, we're kind of encroaching on environment more and more, moving out. And I feel like we've kind of lost track of the fact that all Sasquatch lives matter. Crickets.
No, I understand. I get it.
Oh, my God. It's the best when your joke bombs live on it. Listen, people, I'm leaving that. Anyway. So what is it about, as you're going through these, I always wanted to ask you, because I know you've done a lot of research on different sightings around the world. What is it? I've always wanted to ask you, what is one of your favorite sightings? What is it you remember the most about it, why it's your favorite, or are there a couple? Take us through those, because now it's like campfire time with Carl.
There's a couple, of course. There's the Patterson-Gimlin film, which almost 50 years on still will inspire either, yes, that's the proof, or that was a guy in a suit from the Planet of the Apes movie. And they haven't definitively answered the question yet.
Right.
Another very interesting cases is when the early explorers back in the 1920s and 30s were trying to go up to conquer Mount Everest, and the locals were talking about this abominable snowman, the Yeti, that they would occasionally find tracks for. And there was a lot of intrigue. There was a lot of searching going on. We've heard stories about the people that went there to look specifically for abominable snowman footprints. We've all heard about the famous State Department cable from the late 1940s that if, you know, life was found, how to handle it with the government of Nepal and Tibet to bring one back alive or dead, et cetera, et cetera. That tells me that in that context, we knew something was going on to the extent that the U.S. government would actually get involved officially. If you've got state cables going back and forth talking about the abominable snowman, someone wants to know about it.
Yeah.
This is not some willy-nilly, whimsical, you know, there's something going on here. Somebody wants to know.
That's, those are great points. And the Patterson-Gimlin film always comes up, and I hear people say, give it a rest. But it's like, why? And it's kind of the Holy Grail. And if you look at it, it's got the muscle movements, it's got the gait, it's got the, the inability of the neck to fully move and rotate. It's got boobs. I mean, come on. I mean, who would have thought to get... Go ahead.
I look at the Patterson-Gimlin film through the lens of today's Hollywood. 20 years ago, Hollywood, I don't know what the nice word is, but they want to be able to take credit for everything. They can do that. They could, you know.
Right.
And back in the 1970s, they had guys who were working on the movie for the Planet of the Apes and all these other very high-budget, high-profile Hollywood movies, and these guys themselves were saying, no, we couldn't do that.
Right.
All of our Planet
right.
of the Apes costumes had seams down the back. That's why you never saw one from the back. We couldn't do that back in 1967. And for somebody with the ego of someone in Hollywood to say, you know, we couldn't do that, that tells me a lot.
You know what's funny is that you say that this ties into two things. The fact that you have these favorite things and they're all relevant. My favorite thing, and I showed it to my daughter this weekend on YouTube. She's 10. We watched $6 Million Man fighting Bigfoot. That was my contribution.
I remember that when I was 12 years old.
And didn't the suit suck?
Oh, God.
It was awful. I'll point to that episode, and I'm just like, I'm thinking this while I'm watching it. I'm like, I'm sick. I'm comparing it to Patterson-Gimlin. I can't just sit here and watch this thing and enjoy it. But I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, okay, this is a bad Chewbacca. Like, this is really bad, right?
Really bad Chewbacca.
And even in somebody's mind's eye, they're probably even sitting there, even back then, when I'm a little kid, I'm looking at it going, this is stupid. That's not even real. That's a mammoth. So, I mean,
I remember watching that when I was 12 going, really?
Really? That's all you got?
Really?
I'm going back to Stretch Armstrong. So, you know, look, man, I mean, I swear we can go on and on and on forever. And I know some people out there right now are listening. I know the audience, and they're like, look, guys, we know all this. We've talked about Patterson-Gimlin film. But I want to throw you a question, and we're going to end with this. And you go on for as long as you'd like, because I know you have thought about these kind of things. If in a perfect world, what would you do? I, David, give you a briefcase of unmarked bills, $10 million, and I say, Carl, go find Bigfoot. What does Carl do?
I alluded to this the last time we were talking about the infrared vision. One of the things I would do is to make a series of infrared cameras and also ultraviolet cameras. I mentioned that earlier, that covered in discrete series of frequencies, and then just go to an area where there is pretty good evidence of Sasquatch activity based on tracks and sightings, et cetera, and just set these things up that cover a very wide variety of the infrared and ultraviolet spectrum and see what happens. For the idea, can they see this but not that part of the band? Can they see that but not this part of the band?
Right.
I would also look at a program, and this is going to be weird. I was thinking about this lately. Somehow, where you could anonymously talk to people like hunters and park rangers and those kinds of people who are habitually, regularly, daily in very remote areas along like the Appalachian Trail, up in the Adirondacks, up in the Sierras, up in Washington, Oregon area, where they would be able to completely anonymously talk about things that they've seen and the conditions, give some science background, what time of day it was, what time of year it was, what they saw, when they saw it, how they saw it, what it did. You know, when I was in high school, I wanted to be a journalist. And we were always taught the five W's and the H. Who, what, where, why, when, how, right? Every one of those five W's and the H, I would want to have answered. What were you doing? Where were you? Why were you there? What was going on? What time of day it was? What happened? Where did they go? What direction? What was? Where was the phase of the moon? What was the weather? What was? And if you get enough of that data for a given area, you might be able to come up with patterns. A certain time of the year, a certain month, whether or not they hunker down in rain. If they're even out when it starts to snow, do they move up? Do they move down? Do they follow the deer? There's a big question. Do they follow deer? Do they follow other big game up or down? Just, I'd want to know stuff like that. And even, and I know we do this along the southern border, we have sensors we put along there to find people. Why not put some of those sensors out there where we've got a pretty good idea in certain times of the year where Sasquatch is? Put a sensor out there for a camera that can take a picture in, you know, the high ultraviolet where we can figure out if it's a person or not.
Can you set those sensors, the ground sensors, can you set those to certain weight and vibration?
Absolutely. You can set them for a certain weight where if it's not under 150 pounds, it won't go off. And if it's not a bipedal creature, it won't go off. You can do that.
Interesting. So what you're talking about is, here we go back to what we've talked about it before, in a perfect world, you would like to commission a years-long geospatial study to get these data points all put together and kind of layer everything on top of each other. In a perfect world, I would love to do that. I would love nothing more than to sit there all day and add those data points as they came. I don't have the money.
It probably wouldn't take more than a couple of years. You don't have to do this for 10 years. You would only probably have to do this for maybe 2 or 3 years to get enough data to make someone in the scientific world, the legitimate scientific world, where you could go to them and say, look, we've got 3 years worth of data broken down month by month. This is what we've seen. What do you think? And if you have enough data points, the scientists, no matter what their preconceived notions are, they can't argue with the data.
No, they can't. And that's the one thing, you put that in somebody's face, it's hard to turn away, you know, and ignore that unless you've already got your own agenda.
Right. Unless you've already been, you know, unless your grant money is all about not identifying this, if you've got a scientist out there that goes, we could look at this. Wait a minute.
Yeah. I wonder if there's a way. There's people just wasting money on everything these days. I'd like to put like a one-hour presentation together of, you know, what this would look like and go pitch it to 100 different corporations and say, hey, you know what, put your money behind this as far as a study. It's a tax write-off for you, and, you know, here we go. I don't know. Who knows? I'll never do it, but it's just kind of a bucket list dream of mine. All right. So I'm trying to think what else. I think we pretty much covered off on everything. Unless you didn't have anything else, I think we're going to wrap this up. And we will talk about maybe in the next episode or the following episode some of the things that we kind of were riffing off of and kind of do a little bit more research and see what we can kind of come up with as far as the what ifs.
Okay. All right, Something else I've been looking at is, and it's come up periodically in other Sasquatch podcasts, and I'm still kind of looking into how many animals and what they use it for, but the whole infrasound thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm looking at that wondering, okay, how likely is it? What does it do to people? How can we sense it? What other animals use it? What they use it for?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that next time, too, because I have Stacy Hostetler, who's I'm trying to get on the I know you guys have talked briefly, but I'm trying to get him on the air with us because he had a sighting that kind of launched his Bigfoot Tonight show that's no longer on. But there was an infrasound incident that he had, and he talked about what it did to him. But I also have done some research. One of our listeners had contacted you and I. She's out in your area. I'll leave it at that.
Oh, this is the GIS lady, Chris.
Yes, Chris. Okay. So, anyway, there were some things that she had shared, and I wanted to expound on those. Yeah, so we'll talk about that next week. So, that's great. That'd be absolutely great because now we're kind of fishing for topics. Now we know kind of what to go with.
Yeah.
All right, excellent. So, all right, man, I'm going to jet. We'll talk to you next week. Again, folks, if you have any correspondence for us, if you have any questions for me or for Carl, just do BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com, BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com. Or if you go to blogtalkradio.com, you can look the show up, follow us. Every time there's an update, a show, you'll get it. So anyway, thanks, Carl. If you didn't have anything else, then I think that will do it.
No, I'm done here. Thanks.
All right, my man. Take care.
Night.
Bye-bye.
All right, so thanks so much for spending the last hour with us. Again, I appreciate it. I know Carl does. I know there are plenty of things you could be doing. So the fact that you choose to spend an hour of your life with us here is it's great, and I do thank you for that. And I don't often do this, but I want to throw a shout-out to a show that I really enjoy. I tune in quite often. If I can't do it live, then I'll catch it. I'll download the podcast. It's Monster X Radio. It's Monster X Radio with Shane Corson and Gunnar Monson. I like these guys. They do great interviews. I've heard them go to Sasquatch events and actually get, you know, infield interviews with some pretty influential people. They do great work as far as asking the tough questions, and just the conversation that they have is thought provoking. But again, I would definitely recommend Monster X Radio, and you can find them on blogtalkradio.com. They also have a Facebook page, so yeah, absolutely, for sure, check them out. I also want to take a minute to thank Carl. Now, this guy puts a lot of research into the programs before we air them, and my job is to ask the questions and kind of guide the interview, but we literally do not script the questions. So Carl will field the questions based on what he's read and some knowledge he already has in his head. And I can tell you that he is the most well-read person that I've ever met. And the guy can pull up information from something he read years ago and be spot on. He is truly a conversationalist. And, you know, certainly the program, you know, when I have him on would not be what it is, you know, when it is. And I wanted to take a final minute to talk about the monologue that preceded the program. And I think it's necessary. I know I came out and kind of blasted the community. I didn't do it to anyone in general. I did it in general. I didn't do it to anyone individually. But you know who you are. And, you know, I think in this community, we're past the point of conjecture. You know, certainly the cool fun window is closing or may have closed on Bigfoot. So I think the people that remain are the ones that really do care about the topic, which could be a good thing, because then you'll see a resurgence and, you know, maybe just the core unit of folks who are left will be able to kind of move forward. But, you know, I hope it wasn't too much of a tirade. I hate it when hosts kind of go off on a tangent like that for too long. But, you know, in my mind, it had to be said. So anyway, thanks so much for tuning in. This has been Bigfoot Ground Zero. You can reach us at BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com. And my name is Dave, and for Carl, until next time, over and out.
No matter how he tries to live, he never quite fits in. Bound and gagged and left for dead is how it's always been. He finds it hard to breathe sometimes when he finds it hard to swim. And Carl said, I wish I had someone to call my own and have my lover wait for me whenever I get home. I wish I knew what happened every time you people meet. Oh, the world is big, but I know there's nobody made for me. Becky lives in a one-horse town with ribbons in her hair, waiting for that shining night to take her out of there. And Becky never wanted any more than could hold. She'd given up on finding love a long, long time ago. And Becky said, I wish I had someone to call my own and have my lover wait for me whenever I get home. I wish I knew what happened every time you people meet. Oh, the world is big, but I know there's nobody made for me. Up and then he gently took the hand of the lover he'd been looking for since before his life began. Carl